What's going on, everyone? Welcome to One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 14th of December, 2020, and we're here to recap another great weekend in sports. Sun seems to be shining a little brighter today. The birds seem to be a little bit more excited with their chirping this morning. And overall, everyone just seems to be in a better mood today. So quick notes before we get into it. I want you guys to make sure you check out the Betting Corner podcast, which can be found in the same location as this podcast for all your betting wants and needs. We will still be doing Kona's Underdog of the Week on this pod. However, more betting coverage will be shifted away from this podcast and more into its own separate space. Topics today we are going to be getting into. Of course, we're going to be recapping the Eagles-Saints game from yesterday. Also, we are going to be getting into the ESPN Top 100 Players list for the NBA that they came out with last week and giving my thoughts on the rankings. And then also, we're going to talk about NFL Week 14 as a whole, talk some fantasy stars, and also some NFL storylines. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, and here we go. Let's get into the Eagles and Saints recap, and boy, what a game it was. Eagles 24, Saints 21. The Eagles win to jump to 4-8-1. Still somehow in the playoff picture, I don't know how, but somehow still fighting for a playoff spot. The football team ended up getting a big win against the 49ers yesterday, which pretty much, you know, barring any catastrophic losing streak, will, you know, keep them in firm control of first place in the NFC East. However, with the Giants losing, also the Cowboys winning too, you know, the separation between the four teams has tightened up immensely. So we'll see what happens over the final month of the season. However, we're here today to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles beating the Saints, a game which they got up early on. They got up on the Saints 17-0, and, you know, it looked tremendous in the first half. You know, everything was clicking offensively, defensively, and, you know, great drive to end the second half, and then unfortunately a Jake Elliott missed field goal kind of soured the mood going into the locker room. Could have been 20-0. However, it was only 17-0 going into the half, and then New Orleans came out firing in the second half and cut the lead down to 17-14. Fortunately for Philadelphia, we got the ball back and scored another touchdown and went up 24-14, and unfortunately for the Saints, our defense stepped up, and, you know, although they did score a late touchdown to Jared Cook to make it 24-21, there just wasn't enough time left on the clock for them to make a true comeback, which was good news for the birds. So I have a couple, you know, key takeaways from the game that I wanted to get into. First, obviously being Jalen Hurts, probably why most people are tuning into this podcast today. I'm going to be honest, looked really good. You know, I kind of came in with an open mind to this game and, you know, didn't have my expectations super high, which I kind of think played into my takeaway from how he played. You know, the Saints coming into today had the number one overall offense. I believe they were fourth against the pass in the whole league and second against the rush. So it was going to be a tough task for Jalen coming into the game. But overall, I do think he played well. 17 for 30 for 167 yards, one touchdown through the air. Also added on 18 carries for 106 yards and also lost one fumble late in the game. So for Jalen, I mean, he looked really good, showed great poise in the pocket. I think they kind of broke the game plan down a little bit where he had about 1 to 2 reads, and if the pressure, you know, was starting to get there and the protection was starting to break down, he had the green light to just roll out and make a play. And you know, that led to him not getting sacked one time, which I think is the first time that's happened for the Birds all year. You know, as the stat with Carson, Carson Wentz has shown, he's been getting sacked more than any other quarterback in the league. So just having, you know, Jalen Hurts' mobility, I think, played a huge role in him not taking sacks, because like I just said, he had about one to two reads to make, and then by that time, the pocket was usually collapsed, and he, you know, just took a step back, rolled one way or the other, and absolutely unbelievable athlete, made a lot of plays happen. The one thing I did notice, however, he did have 18 rushes, and off the top of my head, I can probably think of maybe five or six were designed rushes, and that might be being generous. So, you know, most of his work did come from scrambling. So I do think while he did not get sacked one time, I do think that number is slightly misleading, but that's what you get when you put Jalen Hurts into the game, someone who can make up for your offensive line deficiencies and can extend plays and, you know, keep a lot of drives alive. And I think that was the one thing with Carson. You know, his athletic ability isn't quite where it was when he first came into the league, but it's not even in the same stratosphere as Jalen Hurts. At the quarterback position, he's, you know, reminds me of Russell Wilson running around back there. He's not quite Lamar-esque, but he definitely has wheels, knows when to use them, is a strong runner. On the first fourth down of the game, we went for it, fourth and one. It was a little read option, and he ran right up the middle, and one of their safeties came up one-on-one to make the tackle right at the sticks, and they connected, and Hurts pretty much rolled over him for the first down, which was very impressive. Also finished a lot of runs, which was, you know, a little tricky, but also did know when to slide, which I thought was great. You know, didn't take too many big hits. He did stand in the pocket and take a huge hit on his touchdown throw to Alshon Jeffrey. I guess they can take the APB down on Alshon Jeffrey because he has been found. He has been found catching one pass for a touchdown yesterday. You know, Jeffrey didn't really do much except for that, but that's what he does. You know, you don't really throw it too far away from him, but he can make contested catches, and it was a beautiful back shoulder throw by Jalen Hurts to Alshon Jeffrey. So, you know, overall for Jalen Hurts, I think he played really good. He looked really good, I think, which is the biggest takeaway. The moment didn't seem too big for him. You know, 425 on Fox, pretty much a national TV game against the number one seed in the NFC, and you know, we jumped out to him. We jumped out to a big lead and, you know, didn't make mistakes, really. You know, he had the one fumble late, which, you know, depending on if Will Lutz hits a late field goal, would pretty much change the whole complexion of the game. Which, you know, I was watching the game yesterday as he's snapping the ball. I said, Jalen, you better hold on to that. And what do you know? Here comes DeMario Davis comes in, punches that ball out, and you know, we're just lucky Will Lutz was missing field goals yesterday. Otherwise, it would have been a lot closer game. I think that's going to get lost in the shuffle. Will Lutz, a tremendous kicker, probably dealing with an injury right now, missing two field goals. You know, it helped the Eagles a lot. You know, I do think the fumble was probably, you know, obviously we're up by 10, so it didn't really mean, like, it was, you know, less than 3 minutes left in the game, so it wasn't like a huge, huge deal because New Orleans did take time off the clock to score their next touchdown. However, it was something to be mindful of. You know, defensive coordinators are going to be stressing that in the weeks. Make sure you punch this ball. Make sure you punch this ball. You know, he's susceptible to a fumble, even though he only had one. However, as I keep going on with my overall opinion, his rushing production was tremendous. It literally was game-changing. You know, like I just said, with him not taking a sack, I think that, like I said, he had one, two reads and then got out of it. And with the type of athlete he is, I mean, he ran for over 100 yards. Saw a stat on Twitter. I can't think of the person who tweeted it, but actually, I think it was Jason Stark of The Athletic, baseball writer, but had a great football stat here. Last time the Eagles had a 100-yard rusher at quarterback and running back was Donovan McNabb and Deuce Staley. So it's been quite a while, but I do think it was very impressive to see him rack up such great yardage. One thing I did notice, however, you know, going back over the film, kind of, the Saints refused to put a spy on Jalen Hurts. And I thought that was interesting just because, you know, even in the first half, I get it, you might not have a specific game plan, but out of the second half, I feel like they would have had Malcolm or someone spy Hurts because, you know, obviously our receivers have been struggling to get open all year. So if his first or second read's not there, he's taken off. So it was just a little interesting to see that the defensive coverages and blitz patterns they decide to use, because I do think that the spy is going to be coming soon against the Eagles. I'd be surprised if the Giants and Redskins in the last two games of the year don't implement a spy, and I think Arizona has the personnel to do so with their first-round pick, Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. I think he has the athletic ability to spy Jalen Hurts, so I do think that's something we need to look out for in the next game. However, they didn't, so Jalen Hurts took full advantage of it, and it was game-changing. I mean, literally, without his rushing ability, we would not have been in position to score the points we did, keep the drives alive that we did. So I thought it was very, very good on the ground. His production was tremendous. Overall, a so-so performance throwing the ball. You know, he left some throws out there. I think the deep ball to Rager, was tough. You know, I don't know if the wind got a hold of it, but Jalen Rager was pretty much wide open. Safety fell down, and, he missed them. I'm not going to knock him too much for it, but that is a big play in the game. I think a better ball would have made it a little bit easier for Rager. However, it was great to see him take a shot down the field to Rager, your first-round pick. It was definitely nice to see. You know, I don't really want to overreact to one game with Jalen Hurts, but at the end of the day, we did get the win, and he didn't put us in a position to lose the game, which I think Carson has done, you know, probably too many times this year. But as you see, our defense has been good this year, and it showed up again today against a really, really good offense in New Orleans. And, just overall for Jalen Hurts, just to wrap it up, like I've been saying with Carson and how we can't overreact to, 12, 13 game sample size. I'm not going to overreact to one game from Jalen Hurts, because at the end of the day, I mean, his rushing was great and everything. You know, I'm not going to take that away. I just went into detail about how game-changing it actually was. But, you know, 17 for 30, 167 yards. I mean, he's kind of doing what Taysom Hill's doing right now in New Orleans. You know, oddly enough, those two were the two starting quarterbacks on the field yesterday. So that's kind of where I see Jalen Hurts right now, kind of as a Taysom Hill mold, because let's not sugarcoat it. Taysom Hill can sling the ball. He might seem a little frenetic in the pocket and, you know, might not make all the right reads, but he's got a good arm and can sling it. And I do think Jalen has a good arm, but based on seeing him yesterday and kind of what I've been seeing from Taysom Hill, I do think that's Hurts' comp right now. Granted, that can be a successful starting quarterback in the league. Taysom Hill's now 3-1 as a starter this year, so definitely can, you know, do well with it. But I do think we need to temper expectations slightly. Like I said, it was pretty much a national TV game. So once that happened on a national TV game like that, you know, the media was going to be going crazy with Jalen Hurts. But I do think we need to temper expectations slightly and, just kind of take a step back and evaluate him after the three games to finish off the season, because I do think with the win and, you know, how he played, I do think he earned himself at least another start, and I do think the Cardinals are a weaker opponent than New Orleans, even though they just beat the Giants. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens with Hurts and his position on the team for the next couple games. I do think he's going to be the starter the rest of the way, and we'll see what happens. But I do think it was a great first game, great first step. I don't want to, you know, try to poo-poo the situation. His rushing was game-changing, and, you know, he made enough throws to get us the win. So overall, really impressed with Jalen Hurts and his decision making in the game yesterday. Another topic in the game I wanted to touch on real quick was the play calling. First off, finally, we got Miles Sanders involved. I mean, I think Doug Peterson listened to the podcast the last couple weeks, because we just have to get him the ball more. I mean, he has more 70-yard rushes this season than I think any other Eagle in franchise history. And I mean, you see it, he didn't even really get that much work, you know, but it's been more than he has been. You know, final stat line, 14 carries for 115 yards, 2 touchdowns, and also added 4 receptions for 21 yards through the air. You know, it was a great performance by Miles. That's why you give him the ball. He is a home run hitter, and on any carry, can absolutely take it to the house. He's shown it against Pittsburgh. He's shown it against New Orleans, and he's shown it against Baltimore. Although he didn't finish the run, he did have an over 70-yard run that, if he didn't get caught from behind, it was 5 yards away. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside ended up falling on his fumble into the end zone. Just shows you how close he was to another long touchdown. But what was great to see from Miles is, along with the long touchdown, also had a goal line carry and converted it, which gave us our 23rd point, and then Jake Elliott tacked on our 24th. But, you know, it was just really, really great to see. It's kind of frustrating overall that it took a quarterback change for Peterson to change his play calling, you know, to get more runs going and everything. But, you know, that's been one of the frustrating things I was kind of watching the game with. I really wanted Jalen Hurts to succeed, and I'm happy that Doug Peterson, you know, changed the play calling, because I knew he was going to have to with Jalen Hurts at the quarterback position. But it's just like, there was more quick throws, there was more screen passes, there was more end arounds, more rollouts, more bootlegs, more motions, and it's just frustrating because Carson Wentz is still a young quarterback in the league, as much, you know, even though he's been in the league for 5 years, you know, he's still a young quarterback, and when things aren't going well, you need to break it down and do things that are advantageous to positive game scripts. You know, you can't load up and have these 3, 4, 5 read plays. And, you know, they got the ball out of Jalen Hurts' hand quick yesterday, a lot of swing passes, you know, just not getting him in trouble. And I know, obviously, part of that is Carson Wentz and his, you know, infatuation with playing hero ball and doing all that stuff. But, you know, it's just kind of frustrating for Doug Peterson. He's our coach, and I think he's going to remain our coach for multiple years into the future. But it's just, you know, it's just a little frustrating. Hopefully we bring in some other guys this offseason, and it will help, you know, Doug kind of realize that he could do those things for Carson Wentz, and he doesn't have to wait until he has another quarterback. But, you know, I don't want to harp on that too much. I like the play calling a lot. He, you know, orchestrated a great game plan for us, kept us in positive, scripts. Kept us in good down and distances, you know, was aggressive on fourth down, you know, really loved that about Doug. That was one of the things that, you know, helped us in 2017 and helped us be successful the last couple of years. So it was good to see him get back to that and start to be aggressive. And then a couple Jalen Reagor points real quick. You know, I loved the deep shot in the first quarter. It was great to see. I think we needed to take at least one or two of those a game just because of the game-breaking speed he has. And I kind of also mentioned when I was talking about Hurts, I think a better ball would have, you know, helped him out a lot. And then, you know, you're looking at over 80, 90-yard day from there. Over 100 total-yard day with his 19-yard rush. But, you know, it was great to see. But then on the flip side for Reagor, what happened to him returning punts? I mean, I talked about it on last week's pod, how we pretty much drafted him over Justin Jefferson because, along with his speed, he was a great punt returner. And last week, he shows it. Touchdown. A punt return touchdown. We haven't had a punt return touchdown, feels like, in half a decade. And he doesn't even get one return. Greg Ward gets back there. I love Greg Ward, but he's shorthanded, but he's not making anyone miss. You see Greg Ward catch the ball, he might get 10. He might get 5 or 10 yards, and that's like where his ceiling caps. I just don't get why they don't just stick Reagor back there and just let him go. I mean, most of our receivers are healthy now, so, you know, God forbid, knock on wood, he gets lit up on a punt return and gets hurt. We still have some depth to, you know, make up for it, but now we don't want to put him back there returning punts anymore? Like, I don't get it, and it doesn't make sense because of everything they've said about his punt returning prowess. Even after, 1 week after, he returns a punt for a touchdown. Like, I get it if he had, you know, 2 good punt returns week 6, and then the next week he didn't have any carries. It would, or he, like, fumbled. He did fumble early in the year and then hadn't, you know, returned punts very often, but I would get it more, like almost like a pseudo benching that he wasn't back there. But after he scores a touchdown on a punt return, I don't really understand it, and I think that's one thing the Eagles have been, you know, misusing their assets with. I think you need to understand what you have in your players, and I don't think they do to the full extent with Rager, and they really need to utilize his strengths, because that's game-changing to have him back there returning punts, and, you know, you might luck into an extra 6 points from a Rager return touchdown, but, you know, he's not scoring if he's not back there fielding them. So, and that's just one head-scratcher that I was kind of noticing. But other than that, I really liked the play calling from Peterson. You know, the special teams did their job, except for Jake Elliott. And it's tough because if we cut him before 2022, we're going to take an $8 million cap hit. So while I was all for cutting him this year, I really didn't think he should be back on the team next year. But after seeing that we would take an $8 million cap hit, I mean, you might as well keep him. If he goes full-blown yips next year and can't kick anything, then you take the cap hit and you cut him. But I think you rock with him and, you know, just kind of let him roll next year. And then we'll see. We'll reevaluate in 2022. But the star of the game ball, has to go to the defense. I mean, holy moly, what a performance. Defense showed up inspired to play today. One downside before I kind of talk about what we did well. Top-level wide receivers still giving us some problems. Michael Thomas was just feasting over the middle of the field yesterday. 8 receptions, 84 yards. Wasn't game-changing in the sense that DK and Devontae Adams have been the last 2 weeks. But, you know, he still got his and was the most productive player on the Saints offense. Yeah, like I said, was pretty much eaten in the middle of the field. Was finding the soft spots in the zone. And was doing well. However, our defense absolutely stepped up when they needed to. 5 sacks for our team, 2 for Javon Hargrave, which was absolutely great to see from our high-priced free agent acquisition this offseason. Another 2 for Josh Sweat, who I am falling in love with at the defensive end position. You know, a really, really young athletic freak. Is finally starting to put it together this year, and I couldn't be happier for him, because with our aging defensive line, we really need to keep restocking that, because over the years that's been the strength of our team, and I think the offensive and defensive line should be the strength of any good NFL team. So keeping, you know, great young players, athletic players on our line is absolutely outstanding, and it's great that he's starting to put it together and starting to get some results from it. And then also 1 for Fletcher Cox. I mean, what else can you say? He's a top 3 interior defensive lineman in the league, no doubt about it. And, you know, made a big sack in the game yesterday, just to remind everyone how good he's been. And also, finally, it feels like it's been forever, turnovers. Woo! I almost forgot what it was like for our defense to get an interception. Duke Riley picked off Taysom Hill, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not allowed, right? Oh, man, but it was awesome. It was awesome seeing Duke get that pick. It was awesome to see Duke play well. Yeah, I think he's earned the right to be a starting linebacker now, especially with TJ Edwards hurt and, you know, showed up. He's a captain on the team. He's pretty much the captain of special teams. So, you know, it's good to see him get some first-team reps with our defense and make plays. It was kind of a right place, right time situation for the interception, much like Alex Singleton's against the 49ers earlier in the year. But it was just great to see. And then we also had Josh Sweat with 1 of his sacks was a strip sack fumble. We ended up recovering. It was on a 4th down, so we were going to get the ball anyway. But it was just great to see him strip Taysom Hill, and we got the ball there. You know, a turnover on downs is a good kind of momentum boost. But just to get the fumble and recover it, I feel like just jolted up the team even more. And that's what the defense can do. I think our defense is capable of that. The coverage was decent yesterday. The only downside was Darius Slay left with a head injury, and then we had Avante Maddox leave with a leg injury, and then probably the most scary one of all was Rodney McLeod leaving with a non-contact knee injury. So we'll see how serious his injury was, but how great the defense played yesterday. We're going to need those we're going to need those three back out there to play to the best of our ability. However, our front seven yesterday really picked up the slack and looked great. And the defense probably made their best performance of the year. And it was great to see Jim Schwartz probably coaching for his job at this point. Absolutely performed, had a great game plan, and, you know, really stepped up. But overall, I think my opinion on the game yesterday, you know, I'm a little on the fence, because on one side, I do like that we got a huge win against the Saints. You know, over the past couple of years, I've just grown to, you know, grow a disdain for the Saints. You know, whether it be in 2018 when we lost in New Orleans after going up 14-0 in the playoffs, the divisional round, or, you know, them talking all that chatter of they would have beat us in 2017. You know, all this stuff. I just feel like there's been a growing rivalry. It was just good to take them out. But it was a good win. And, a little bittersweet because we're going to have a worse draft pick now. But, you know, a win's a win, and that's why you play the game. All right, on to topic two. We are going to discuss the ESPN Top 100 NBA players that came out last week, and boy, did they have some bad rankings on this one. I'm gonna just use a disclaimer on the list. Looking into it, and as I was kind of seeing some of the rankings, everything, it did look like it was, well, first thing, they did have it projected for the upcoming season. They said we think this is going to be the projected top 100 for the upcoming season. However, this list for years now has been something that's been heavily scrutinized by many, even those inside ESPN. So, you know, I really think it's just interesting. So, you know, the youth seems to be valued much higher than past performance for many of the players. And I do respect them, though, for going out on a limb for some players, taking that jump to the next level. And we'll kind of discuss them as we get through. But let's just dive right into it, starting with the top 10. You know, for anyone that knows me, knows I'm a big Steph Curry guy. So to have him at 8 is absolutely disgusting. You know, I love Damian Lillard, too. But to have him a spot ahead of him, I do think it's a little bit aggressive. You know, I think those are the top two point guards in the league. But, you know, call it team-based or what you want, but Lillard's had no success against Steph, whether it be in the playoffs or in the regular season. I think the numbers bear out, too, that Steph has been, you know, more productive. Lillard had just an unbelievable year last year and an unbelievable bubble performance, so I do think there's a little bit of recency bias there. However, Steph, first of all, at 8 is disgusting, and it's way too low. That kind of leads us into Luka Doncic at 4. Feels a little too high. You know, I do think he's going to have an opportunity to contend for an MVP this year, depending on how good Dallas is. But to have him at 4, it just feels too high. It might be right. It just feels way too high. I think Steph's 4. You know, I think he's 4 on the list. And I don't know. I would have dropped Luka. I would honestly take Steph and Lillard probably ahead of Luka. So that was just one of the main things I kind of saw in there. And then also, can we talk about this? Kevin Durant, anywhere but number 2 on this list, is absolutely blasphemous. I mean, he's only not at number 2 because of injury, but after the first week of the season, I think everyone's going to understand that this man is Kevin Durant, and he is a top, you know, 15-20 player all time. So I think after that, he's going to slop right back into that number 2 slot. Because to have him, you know, anywhere outside the top 5 is disrespectful, and I just wouldn't stand for it. So I had to say a little piece on that. And then also, just to kind of finish out some of my thoughts on the top 10, I don't love Nikola Jokic over Embiid for number 10, but I understand it, if that makes sense. Pretty much for, it's a preseason list, kind of based off on how each team ended the year last year, and the Nuggets, you know, had a great ending to the year, and the Sixers got swept out of the first round. So, you know, I understand it, but I do think that this time next year, Embiid will be supplanted into the top 10 easily, and should be ahead of Nikola Jokic for, you know, the center rankings and overall top 10. Okay, now we're going to move into the 11 to 50 rankings. And this is where a lot of discrepancies happen for me. First of all, Jason Tatum, I wanted to talk about at number 11. I love Tatum, Duke boy. Anyone that knows me knows I'm a big Duke fan. I do think that is accounting for a jump he's going to take this year. You know, I don't hate it, but, you know, I don't love it either. Just 11 feels a little too high again, like I kind of said, but, you know, I don't hate it. I didn't really write that on my notes or anything. Just kind of wanted to discuss that because I thought it was an interesting placement for Jason Tatum. But the first thing I wrote down here is Bam at 13? Question mark. I mean, I love Bam. You know, I ate my words this year. Didn't really think he was anything, you know, special. Didn't think he was a top 10, 15 player in the league, but he had a great playoffs, don't get me wrong, and, you know, him being out in the finals probably swung it to an easy Lakers win in the series, but, you know, Bam at 13, I mean, over Embiid, that's tough. That's really tough, because I think Embiid's a lot more talented, but Bam, I don't know. I think Embiid's better on both ends of the floor. Maybe not as good a passer, but that's one of the slept-on aspects of Joel Embiid's game. So I just think Bam at 13 was way too high, and Embiid was way too low. So that was the first thing I kind of saw. Also, Zion at 19, like I kind of said about Luka, it just feels a little too high. I think it's accounting for a big jump he's going to take this year, and I can't wait. I hope he does make that jump, but just to have him at 19 right now feels a little too high. I feel, you know, I'll be the first one to line up and jump on the bandwagon if he starts absolutely tearing it up, but just for now, I do think it's a little bit too high, to start the season. I think we can do that mid-season, but for right now, I don't know. And then also, I've kind of been a Pascal Siakam hater. You know, he's really good defensively. He's got one move on offense, that spin move, and everyone really knows it, so, you know, I don't love him at 24, you know, ahead of guys like Kyrie Irving and Rudy Gobert. You know, the latter there feels a little bit more established. You know, Rudy Gobert, obviously, probably a top two defensive player in the league. And Kyrie Irving is Kyrie Irving, you know, one of the best offensive players in the game. And I just feel like both are more established than Siakam. And I think the Siakam ranking, again, is based on a projected jump he's supposed to take, but I still don't like him over Kyrie Irving or Rudy Gobert. Another player, as we start to move down the list a little bit, that I think was criminally underranked is Drew Holiday. I think he is probably the most underrated player in the NBA today, and he slotted in at 33, which is good. You know, I like the 33 rank, but behind guys like Jaylen Brown at 32, Ja Morant at 31, Trae Young at 29, and Brandon Ingram at 28. You know, I think I would take Drew over all those players. Now, for the rest of their careers, I would probably take those four over Drew Holiday. But for right now, for the next 3 years, I mean, I would definitely take him over Jaylen Brown and Brandon Ingram, like, at the drop of a hat. But, you know, Ja Morant and Trae Young, if Trae Young could figure it out defensively, you know, he warrants that. And then Ja Morant has star potential, like Russell Westbrook star potential. So I do see that too. However, Drew is just one of the best defenders in the league and also is an outstanding offensive player. So I do think him ranked below guys like that is wrong. And I think Drew's going to prove that this year being on a contender in Milwaukee. Another ranking that made me laugh here, Russell Westbrook at 36, probably too low. It was just kind of made me laugh that he was at 36. I kind of talked on this on previous pods. I'm not the biggest Russell Westbrook fan, so just to kind of see him at 36 made me laugh. But he should be ahead of guys like De'Aaron Fox and Trae Young, and definitely Brandon Ingram too. So that was kind of a probably a for a decline. Probably accounting for a decline. So you know, I don't like him there. But my biggest discrepancy on the whole top 100 is Marcus Smart at 37. I mean, 37 for Marcus Smart? I mean, are you kidding me? He's ahead of guys like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander at 38, Kristaps Porzingis at 41, Nikola Vucevic at 42, Draymond Green at 44, Caris LeVert at 46, Victor Oladipo at 47, and Kemba Walker at 48. I would take all seven of those players over Marcus Smart in a heartbeat. Like, come on. 37? That is ridiculous. I mean, are you kidding me? I hate that, and I think they messed up with that one big time. All right, just a couple thoughts real quick on the 50 to 100. They have Michael Porter Jr. at 51. Seems way too high. I do think they're accounting for a big jump there. But just at 51, I don't really get it. We're going to get into some guys I'm going to talk about right now that I would probably take all of them ahead of him right now, but we'll see. Zach LaVine at 56, I think is too low. He should easily be ahead of the two guys right in front of him, Lonzo Ball and Christian Wood. I think he's just an elite scorer, and he's going to prove that this year. Couple older guys feel maybe a little forgotten. Kevin Love at 64, and Blake Griffin at 65 feel way too low. I mean, both of them are great players who have fallen down the rankings the last couple years, but I think both of them should be a little bit higher on this list, especially with the evolution to their games to more perimeter-oriented and have adapted to today's game. One of my probably my second biggest discrepancy on the list is DeMar DeRozan at 82. I mean, people must really have forgotten who DeMar DeRozan was. Yeah, granted, he doesn't shoot threes like that, but he is an easy 20-25, rolling out of bed. And just because he played on the Spurs and they didn't make the playoffs last year, you might have not seen it. But DeMar DeRozan is absolutely a top 50 player. I mean, easily, top 50, 60. So to have him at 82 feels, you know, a little bit blasphemous, to be honest. Also, three more real quick. Buddy Hield at 87 feels a little too low here. I think he's really growing into the prototypical high-level role player. Role player might even be a little bit of a slight on him, but I think he's a high-level championship player who you need on your team. A great, great, great shooter, and someone who's starting to figure out a little bit on the defensive end. So I think at 87 is a little low here, but you know, I don't really know how high I would move him up. Just wanted to kind of touch on that. Also, Patrick Beverley is 90 on the list. I don't even know how he made the top 100 here. I mean, we got guys like, first off, LaMarcus Aldridge at 95. Side note, that's unbelievable that LaMarcus Aldridge is that low. But he should easily be ahead of Patrick Beverley. Jared Allen at 94. I'd probably take over Patrick Beverley. Mitchell Robinson at 92. I would take over Patrick Beverley. But I just don't get how he made the top 100 list. And back to LaMarcus Aldridge, he should easily be in the top 80 to 70. Definitely around the Steven Adams range. Steven Adams is ranked at the 70 spot. I definitely would take LaMarcus over Steven, and he should be ranked accordingly. Okay, now we're just going to swing it into topic number three today, which is the NFL 14 recap. And this is going to be our last segment of the day. So to start off, let's get into some fantasy stars and run through some high performers from yesterday. First, we're going to start at the quarterback position. Aaron Rodgers, 290 yards, 3 touchdowns. Also added 6 carries for 13 yards and a touchdown on the ground. His performance yesterday helped the Packers take over the number one seed in the NFC, along with the Eagles' win over New Orleans. So that was big for the Packers. Also, Tua Tagovailoa, 316 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Also added 6 carries for 24 yards and 1 touchdown on the ground. Showed promise against the big bad Kansas City Chiefs. Ended up getting a crazy backdoor cover, which I don't want to talk about. But, looked really good. Drew Lock, 280 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's pretty much his ceiling, his potential. You know, he's shown that in a couple games that he can be that. It's just consistency for him is going to make him an every week starter in fantasy. Also, Mitchell Trubisky in the battle of 2017 draft picks outshined Deshaun Watson. Granted, Deshaun has a shell of a franchise in the Houston Texans. But Mitchell put up 267 through the air, 3 touchdowns, also added 4 carries for 23 yards. And, helped the Bears get a blowout win. It was big for them, and they needed it. So let's swing it to running backs. Talk about the bell cow here, Derrick Henry. I mean, he is going to absolutely terrorize defenses the rest of the way. He's got Detroit, I believe, this week, and then Green Bay the next 2 weeks. Talk about beautiful fantasy matchups. 26 carries yesterday for 215 yards, two touchdowns, also added on two catches for 7 yards. Just an absolute stud. He's probably going to win the rushing title again this year and is easily going to be a top five pick in fantasy next year. I was a hater on him. I'm eating my words. Shout out Nick Jack. He looks really, really good, and, you know, you can't take anything away from him. Also, Jonathan Taylor yesterday finally had his breakout game, 20 carries, 150 yards, two touchdowns, along with two receptions for 15 yards. This is what fantasy managers have been waiting for all year with Jonathan Taylor, and they were finally rewarded from starting him in a key playoff matchup. So for all of you that started him, congratulations. Also, we talked about it already a little bit. Miles Sanders finally had a great game, 14 carries, 115 yards, two touchdowns, and added on four receptions for 21 yards. Great game, helped the Eagles out immensely. And to wrap up the running back position, Mike Davis, 11 carries for 51 yards, two touchdowns, also added on five receptions for 42 yards. Okay, running back or the wide receiver position, Allen Robinson paced the position with 9 receptions, 123 yards, and a touchdown to help Mitchell out. Also, Calvin Ridley, 8 receptions, 124 yards, and a touchdown to help Matt Ryan. I also made this list before the Sunday night game. Stephon Diggs had an outstanding performance, 10 catches, over 120 yards, and a touchdown. Just an absolute beast. So he would make this list also. Tyreek Hill had a weird game, 3 receptions, 79 yards, a touchdown. Also had 1 carry for 32 yards and a touchdown. I mean, you just get the ball in his hands and good things happen, as demonstrated by the 32-yard rush along with the bomb from Patrick Mahomes, 30, 40-yard touchdown. So, you know, it was good to see from him. Also, a little bounce back for T.Y. Hilton. Last 3 games, he scored and looked really good. Yesterday, he had 5 receptions for 86 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Colts win over Las Vegas. And, you know, it's just shown that anyone that stuck with him through the year has starting to get rewarded. And now we talk about tight ends, and honestly, where else to start other than Travis Kelce? I mean, he's going to be in this spot every single week. 8 receptions, 136 yards, and a touchdown. Easily the number one tight end in the league, especially with George Kittle hurt. Ertz falling off a cliff, and Waller is his closest competition. But there's no question that Travis Kelce is the number one. He will arguably be a late first-round pick next year and will probably go in the second in most drafts. Mike Gesicki made this list last week in the top 4 and again makes it again. 5 receptions, 62 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Southern grad, shout out South Jersey. Absolutely looked great and, you know, looked to become a favorite of Tua Tagovailoa. TJ Hockenson also made this list last week. Another good performance, 6 receptions, 63 yards, and a touchdown. Last week he made the top 4 without scoring. This week he had the yards and the touchdown to boot. So, it was a great showing out of Hockenson yesterday. Also, my shot in the dark, I played in a fantasy league this week. Irv Smith Jr. of the Minnesota Vikings, 4 receptions, 63 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah, I really like Irv. I think he's going to climb my rankings next year. I think he's a big athletic tight end for the Vikings, especially with their play-action game. I think he is going to be a good tight end next year and hopefully a consistent one because he has shown that he can be that when given the opportunity. Just a couple storylines I wanted to touch on real quick. Big Bills win on Sunday Night Football. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs is one of the best wide receiver quarterback combinations in the league, and you know, it's really funny what a number one wide receiver can do for a young quarterback. Howie Roseman, I'm talking to you. But, you know, I'll let it slide. We already talked a little bit about the Packers taking over the number one seed in the NFC. I think that's huge for them. And, you know, they control their own destiny now. And Washington, the football team, with another great win over the San Francisco 49ers on the road in Arizona. They look to have taken over the NFC East. And they're going to be a really tough out in the playoffs. Their defense is outstanding. And, you know, I really think that they're going to be a tough out. I thought either the Giants or Washington was going to be a tough out in the playoffs, you know, regardless. But I do think if Washington makes it, they probably have a little bit better defensive line and star power on the defensive line, especially that performance from Chase Young yesterday. I mean, an absolute beast. Sack, forced fumble, touchdown. I mean, absolutely worth the number two overall pick last year. And as an Eagles fan, it's sad to see that they got someone who's a game wrecker like that. Okay, though, time to talk about everyone's favorite segment, Kona's Underdog of the Week. I got Kona in the studio here with me to help me with my picks today. Last week, we recommended the Bills plus 2.5 on the look-ahead line last Monday, and the Bills ended up closing at minus 2 favorites. So if you got the plus 2.5, you know, it was a great call by Kona. You know, she was studying the lines all week and you know, found a great one. And, you know, they ended up winning 26-15, and that moved Kona's record on the year to 3-1. From our week last week, we went 2-1, obviously, so now we're 3-1. You know, Kona's Underdog of the Week has been what many critics across the country are saying, the hottest show in town, the thing you cannot miss, absolutely, because it's just steaming hot. So let's get into her picks for this week. So I have three lines that I liked. You know, I didn't see any loves this week. Like, the Bills line last week was a love. The Washington line from 2 weeks ago was an absolute love. This week I have three likes. I do think they're all winners. Obviously, I wouldn't include them if I didn't think so. But the number one, I'm going to hop on the Birds bandwagon here and take them plus 6 at Arizona. I do anticipate this line to shift slightly, maybe to Philly plus 5. So I would be looking to grab them plus 6 as soon as you can. That would be my number one bet on this list. My number two bet, I think, here is Washington plus 4.5 against Seattle. I think the Giants showed a good defense, can really stymie Seattle. And, you know, I think the market might overreact slightly to Seattle's win against the Jets this last week, 40-3. And, you know, Washington's always coming in on good form, too. So I think to get them plus 4.5, this line might even move back to 4, 3.5. So I really like them plus 4.5 against Seattle at home. And my third pick here is going to be the Thursday night football game, the Los Angeles Chargers plus 3 at Las Vegas. For those of you that listened to the Betting Corner podcast that came out on Friday last week, I did mention how I loved the Chargers all week. Last week, they went from a pick'em to plus 2 and then back down to plus 1. So, you know, it was a little bit of a market overreaction and then correction. I do think they're going to look good against Vegas this week. I don't really know what to make of Vegas, really. They've looked really good in some games and really bad in some games. But I do think Herbert hopefully figures it out after a bad game. Had a good bounce back last week. And I think he gets it done against Vegas on the road at plus 3. All right, everyone. That's going to wrap up the show today. Just to put a bow on it, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. If you want to follow us on social media, please check the description below for the show's account as well as my personal account. I hope you've all enjoyed the show today, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I am your host, Noah Gillian, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.